God, this is going to have to be amazing.
Get on with it. Jamie, do I just press stop?
Welcome back to the LDPC, the podcast that brings you Lockdown Island Discs. These are pieces of music that have been chosen by certain individuals who talk to us about their lockdown experience and the music which has accompanied it. All the music discussed can be found on the LDPC Episode 4 playlist on Spotify, for we cannot include the audio in the podcast for copyright reasons. For this episode, I'm joined once more by co-host James.
Hello. Welcome back. Thank you very much. Lovely to be back.
And I am delighted to introduce our fourth guest on the LDPC, singing sensation, both a queen and a king, Charlotte King.
Goodness. What an introduction.
Thank you.
That was quite cheesy, but I quite
so
liked it.
So slick.
Yeah, it was damn good, wasn't it?
Well done, well done. Thanks.
So, welcome, Charlotte, Kingy, Shaw,
yeah, whatever you like. Charlotte King, mezzo-soprano, as I did actually state earlier.
Yeah, sorry, didn't you read the contract, Becky? Yeah.
I can do that if you want to say Charlotte King, mezzo-soprano.
I bet Charlotte King, mezzo-soprano, has got a horrendous rider, hasn't she, that goes ahead to every concert.
Yeah, I need to.
M&M's with the red ones taken out. Puppies.
Didn't have to do that for this.
Probably has to have the dressing room redecorated with Laura Ashley wallpaper.
Laura Ashley, God, what a throwback. Yeah.
We digress already, I love
there
it.
So sorry. Sorry, I'll shut up.
If I refer to this wonderful lady here as Kingy, that's because her surname is King, and I know of her by that name, so that's who I'm talking about if you hear me say that. So, Charlotte King, mezzo-soprano, please can you just tell us a bit about yourself?
Thank you.
Yeah, what's your name, where'd you come from?
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, well, my name's Charlotte. I'm just from a small place in Essex. I'm currently talking to you from the southeast of London. I'm an opera singer and I'm a singing teacher. And that's about it, to be honest. And it that takes up most of my week.
Well, it's enough to be getting on with, Charlotte.
Yeah. It's enough. Yeah. And yeah, it's pretty varied, to be honest, and lots of different places to work. But yeah,
I suppose. Are you a freelance, or are you an employed teacher somewhere, or is it a combination of the two?
Technically self-employed, but I've been at the school, you know, one school I've been at for 12 years. And so I'm a peripatetic teacher. So I go in and teach singing in, I've got six schools. And then if I'm lucky enough to get any opera contract, I just step it out. And everyone's really kind about that and lets me indulge in my flailing opera career. And then I just come back as and when I please. So it works really well, actually, being self-employed.
Yeah. It's very tough to get into that kind of world, though, isn't it?
It's so hard. And I think, I hate saying that you need a backup, but you definitely need some kind of bread and butter. Because if it's always going to be a high percentage of either teaching or singing. And mine is definitely teaching. And but I love it that way, actually. It's gone that way quite organically. And I'm really happy about it, to be honest. But it could all change, you know, in 2 years, 5 years, 20 years. I mean, just whatever, wherever the wind takes me.
How was the start of lockdown before, you know, sort of March, before when the schools closed, but before the summer holidays? How were you managing to, or were you managing to teach in the schools?
Yeah, so start of lockdown, obviously the schools, we knew that we were going to lock down. We were always like told on the sly. So I went into massive panic mode because I just finished a chorus contract at ENO and I was so excited and happy and then really excited about going back to teach. And then suddenly thinking, how on earth can we make this work online? Especially with singing is really, really challenging on Zoom. And so I did a couple of test runs with some students, and luckily all of the schools are kind of set up either with Teams or Google Meet or something like that. Did a couple of test runs, and that made me feel a bit better. So the bit just as we went into lockdown was better, I think, than for other Perry teachers, because they hadn't, you know, prepared or tested or anything like that. So I kind of relaxed over the Easter holidays, and going into the next term feeling way more prepared. Because it was terrifying. Because at first we were like, oh my God, we're not actually employed. So
no, that's right. That's right. There's a lot of people who everything just fell off a cliff kind of pretty much overnight, right? So
literally. And especially with opera, it just, everything stopped. And people's contracts were being pulled, you know, and still are. And people are still getting their contracts cancelled into next year, just not knowing what's going to happen, especially with the theatres, with, you know, the social distancing at the theatres. But everything changes every single week. But then in the time that it takes to create theatre, you can't have like a week's notice and then just oh great, cool, we can open now with a production.
Even when you get the green light, it's still going to take some time, isn't it, before things can be rehearsed and put together and everything else,
especially in a new socially distanced scenario, and especially with opera singers as well. You know, there's been so much about that, about how loudly you can sing, and opera is not quiet. So it's
no that's for sure.
Yeah,
but there was some, was there not something being published either today or tomorrow or quite soon that's going
it's been published by Declan Costello, who's like the best ENT, and he did a study with wind players, brass players and opera singers, and basically got them to hilariously sing Happy Birthday at many different volumes into a funnel, you know, in a clean room, and to measure the droplets in the air at various different volumes, especially with something, if you're a professional singer or a professional brass player, it could be considerably more or it could be considerably less. And that's the thing, because no one knew really. So that has been released, and actually it's pretty positive news in that it's no worse than speaking. Who knew singing would present so many issues. But it's kind of been the focal point as well. It's so funny. So that's been the focus of lockdown, really, is hoping and waiting. Hopefully we'll get there. There's a light.
Yeah, there is.
Let's hope it's not a train. Okay.
Wow.
Sorry.
No.
Have you not had a good day, Bex?
I'll
be all right. Wow. Give me a couple of minutes.
All right.
My first question before we get cracking is this list a desert island on your playlist on Spotify? It says Charlotte Desert Island Discs. Is it desert island or is it lockdown? Well, so would your desert island discs be different to this?
Yeah. So it's influences from both, because I definitely would not choose to take some of the tracks with me to a desert island, because I chose them because it was immediately something that I associated with lockdown and usually through teaching. So I think it's definitely a combination of both. It's difficult to describe, because some of them I wouldn't want to listen to over and over and over again, but they've been so present that I couldn't ignore them.
No, I think that's a good answer.
The other thing is, I mean, in a message the other day, you said there was a connection between them.
Yeah, well, there is. They're all weirdly connected.
Do you want to tell us that at the end then, or
I think it's going to come out as we start talking. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's crack on then with track number one, which is Fleetwood Mac's Everywhere.
Oh, yeah. We're straight in it. I love Fleetwood Mac. And I listen to Rumours a lot. This is not from the Rumours album, but I love Rumours.
No, this is Tango in the Night.
It is.
I'm old enough. I had it on cassette. Man. I'm that old. I actually had this album on tape.
But this, so this was later, wasn't it? This was like 80s?
87. Or 86, something like that.
Yeah. And so this song I chose because this is the song that Jamie and I will or would have been walking back up the aisle to. I know, I'm sorry to start on such a downer, but it's such a happy, joyful song.
It's such a great song.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's perfect. I love it. It makes me feel so happy. And originally we were going to have, hopefully we still will have, I love an all-male a cappella. It's just something so great about that. So actually, there's a lot of singing involved in the ceremony. It's not a religious ceremony, obviously. And it was going to be an all-male a cappella group singing that and arranged for our wedding, especially by someone amazing and clever. But that's why that track is there, because it just brings me so much joy, even though it's kind of, you know, a bit bittersweet at the moment. It's just a
so great... Can you tell us a bit more about your wedding situation then?
Yeah, I mean, so we're supposed to be getting married on the 5th of September and in Peckham. It's very cool, pretty cool. at a place called the Asylum.
Lovely.
Which is a great venue, but we're not actually getting married there anymore. So we were going to just have the ceremony, and then it kind of just got all a bit COVID-y, and you know, you couldn't have food or drink and things like that, and you know, it's too tight. And we just thought we'd look back and think, why did we bother doing that? Why didn't we just wait and enjoy the day with all of our friends, you know, because we didn't want to restrict the guest list. And and also even since then things change, you know, they pulled it back. They said, oh, now you can't get married. And then they said, oh, now you can. And now you can eat. And like, I don't want to be worrying about that like 2 weeks before.
So was it kind of a fairly easy decision in the sense that you knew that you definitely didn't want to have a small wedding and that you wanted to wait, even though it was difficult having to do it? But
yeah,
funnily,
it wasn't so much about the small wedding. It was just that everything had associations to this pandemic, and we were like, why don't, like, you have to wash your hands before and after the rings, and like,
oh gosh, yeah,
you know, it's supposed to be amazing and special and something you want to remember in the most positive way, and everything had an association to the pandemic. So yes, it was an easy decision in that sense, and it wasn't so much about having a smaller wedding, because obviously I'd love to pay for just 30 people rather than 100. But yeah, it's the right decision. But everyone's got their own reasons. I think, you know, if they go ahead and do the ceremony, good for them. Because I think it's a really tough decision to make and to have to deal with in such a short time frame.
Have you chosen your next date?
Yeah. Yeah, so we did that before we actually officially cancelled, because we were going to move. We went to the reception venue, which is a different venue in Brixton, and they were doing all of these major works. And we're like, oh, is this going to be finished? This is awkward. And they basically said, this is not going to happen. You're not going to be able to have a reception for 100 people here. So we made the decision then and there, which was about 3 months ago. And said, cool, we'll move the reception. So we moved that first. So we settled on the 10th of September next year. And then, unfortunately, the Asylum Chapel could not do the same date. So now we're having the whole thing in Brixton.
Hey.
Yay!
Cool. Awesome. How did you come to this song originally? Because it's, you're not old enough.
I know. So, do you know, absolutely not.
Can you not remember?
Well, I think I came across it because, and again, it's related to the wedding.
Yeah.
Because I'm walking up the aisle to Christine McVie Songbird, and
okay,
I just love that song. It makes me just weep. It's yeah. so beautiful. Yeah. And I love her singing it. It was sort of, that's where listening to Fleetwood Mac started a really long time ago. Mm. And I can't say, you know, I'm not an expert on Fleetwood Mac at all. All I know is that I just love their music and enjoy, yeah. It's something that you can listen to in whatever mood you're in. There's something yeah. that speaks to you in any situation, and it's joyous. It's depressing. Yeah. It's just
no, that's true.
It's and that's just why I love listening to it. It's something you can have on in the background, and you don't even have to pay attention to it.
Shall we move on to track number two, which is I'm not going to be able to say this properly, am I? It's the one from Carmen.
Oh, oh, that old one. Yeah, yeah. Habanera. why have I put this on here? Carmen is, I thought, when I was doing the playlist, I was like, oh, I better put some opera on because, like, that's my job. But I have to be honest, like, it's not, I think this is probably the same for a lot of opera singers. You don't really listen to opera unless you're working on it. Mm. And the reason I picked Carmen, I think because it's such a monumental role to sing and learn and study, and I'm still studying it now, and it's something that I will always, not Habanera, but one of the other arias, it's something that I will always do in auditions. I'm constantly reworking it and learning from it and about it. It just seems one of those impossible things. But the reason I put Habanera actually is just because it's so famous. And yeah. And then I picked Callas singing it, even though I think she's a little bit she's a little bit Marmite for singers, but I think she's just pretty monumental.
I was going to ask about that. I mean, yeah. I assume that she was chosen for a reason.
When I listen to her in a technical capacity, and again, so many singers would disagree, and some, you know, lots of people would agree. I just think technically she is so flawless. Sure, she's got like a massive wide vibrato, but like the things she can do with her voice and to make it sound so effortless and linear and so expressive. She was so expressive. And also just her as Carmen, I think, is iconic.
There was a real charisma though with her,
yes,
wasn't there?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, and you have to have that playing yeah. her, which I yeah. definitely do not.
Could you give us a little sort of tiny little rundown of what the opera is about for those who have never heard of it before?
Yes, definitely. Okay, so Carmen, you meet her pretty quickly. She is working in a cigarette factory, and she is, I mean, how to describe her? I mean, you could very simply
free spirit.
Very free spirit. You could say she's a man eater. She's incredibly dangerous, but also very vulnerable and terrifying, but men are completely hypnotized by her. Women want to be her but hate her, and you know, she's amazing. So it starts with Carmen. She gets into a fight at the cigarette factory and gets arrested, and Don Jose, the tenor, is holding her prisoner, and this is when it all starts really. And she starts this whole liaison with Don Jose. Is it really love for her? Probably not. But he falls completely, you know, dangerously in love with her. And she convinces him to, you know, come with her and all the smugglers and join the smugglers. Don't be a police officer. Don't be a goody two-shoes. And essentially...
You can take the girl out of Essex. Don't bring goody t-shirts.
Yeah. So you can see I'm not very good at playing Carmen. It's always such a wuss. She kind of brings him over to their side, the smuggler's life. But he's got this childhood sweetheart who's just, you know, the personification of innocence and love. and his childhood, his mother, and Carmen is the devil on his shoulder. And then Carmen turns her eye to the toreador, Escamillo, and she gets bored of Don Jose, basically. And Don Jose gets incredibly jealous and kills her.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Soz.
I think for people who don't necessarily think they know the opera, I think they would actually recognise quite a few of the tunes.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Pretty exactly.
Pretty famous.
Yeah. I mean, you're straight in there at the very, very start of the overture, aren't
yeah.
you? I mean,
it's
just one after the other in there.
Yeah, hits.
Yeah, all
just,
the hits.
Just like Rumours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and which is why it could be, dependent on the production, a really good first-time opera for anyone. And also the themes, jealousy, love, all of that. It speaks to people. Sure, it's a little bit old-fashioned storyline, all of that, and not something we can immediately relate to. But like I say, if it's the right production, then it can.
I had a few fun facts about this. So the composer, Bizet, died after the 33rd performance and didn't see the success that the opera would become.
I know.
He died at the age of 36, which is completely tragic.
Wasn't it throat cancer or something like that? Like his.
That's not part of my fun fact, I'm
afraid. Oh, so sorry, you didn't have a bullet point.
No, it's not the funnest of fun facts, even if it was...
No, sorry about that.
Yeah, throat cancer.
Sorry, just continuing to bring the joy. Yeah.
A less fun fact, it was first performed in 1875. And something I found quite interesting. Have you heard about a production that they did in Florence? I'm actually not sure when they did this. And they changed the ending so that Carmen ends up killing Don Jose with his own gun. It was like in support of the number of women who are killed by their partners in Italy, which I thought was
That's, and also I love that about opera as well. And it's one of those things that all of the old time opera goers will be like, oh no, you know, you mustn't change it, you know, but like sometimes you've got to change it up a little bit.
Does it matter?
It's a really interesting argument.
Right. Shall we move on to track number 3?
Sure. What is it?
Which is A Night at the Chinese Opera. Oh,
this is Judith Weir. Go on, because this is completely new to me. To my shame, I don't know.
Completely new to me.
I don't know much about Judith Weir at all.
Did you know you picked it?
What is this? This was actually, it was picked by Jamie, my fiancé, because, getting all that lovey-dovey. This opera was the first opera that we did together, that we met on in 2012 with British Youth Opera. Night at the Chinese Opera is by Judith Weir. And obviously, as young opera singers, none of us had heard of it. We definitely hadn't sung it before. It's completely balmy and really is quite difficult to sing. it's not known for its bangers like Carmen. But what was great about it was that I had done British Youth Opera before, but it kind of, you know, introduced me to British Youth Opera and all of these incredible people that you can meet and the access that you have to a professional production in the Peacock Theatre with amazing directors, amazing orchestra, and just it's such a good opportunity for young opera singers to be able to do that. And this, you know, they're still going strong and they've been going strong in lockdown as well. The aria is by Mrs. Chin. I was cover Mrs. Chin and Old Crone. Just always typecast. And it was actually really epic because the old crone was this, I just can't describe, I wish I had a picture to show you. Maybe I can send one to you in post. It was an enormous puppet, or it was a head of an old Chinese crone that I had to have my hand inside her head, and then my foot was strapped to a plank, and then my other hand was holding her arm, So I was walking inside her. And for that, because they're two different roles. So for the old crone, she was just speaking in rhythm, but it was really hard rhythm.
Yeah. That does sound really hard.
And then and then walking out of rhythm as well at the same time. Mm. So,
oh my gosh.
I mean, really quite challenging for me. and it was just epic. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe we can do this in opera.
What is the opera about?
Oh God, why are you asking me this? It's quite difficult to describe. It's a play within an opera. And ultimately, it's about finding... the journey of self-identity. So Chow Lin is on a journey of discovery, and it's all his life is played out through the actors in the play, with, and it's all set in 13th century China. I mean, it's completely mad, but that's really the best way I can describe it in a really quick way.
I have another fun fact. It premiered in Cheltenham in 1987.
Oh, there you are. Same as Tango in the Night.
Yeah, there's the link.
There's the link.
No,
if you want to, yeah, I would. For those listening who we had an opera heavy one previously as well, and we talked a lot about sort of how to sort of get into opera if you're not quite sure where to start. Definitely go for the Carmen first.
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
But do definitely give this other one a listen and see what you think about it, I think. But does anyone want anything else to say on that one?
No, just about, you can always go for the classics. The classics are always going to be churned out over and over again. But if you can, go to a contemporary opera because it's going to be a new production. And it's going to be much more relatable, probably, with themes that we are much more aware of. And so in that way, sure, we might not understand what we're listening to, and that's okay, doesn't matter, because it's not always about that. It's about how it speaks to you, how it communicates to you, and also being able to watch. Usually if it's a contemporary production, they're going to work pretty hard on lighting, set, things like that, and doing everything to make it really visually stimulating for you. And that in itself is worth seeing as a piece of theatre. So
very nicely put.
Thanks. Without notes.
Let's move on to track number 4, which is Jolene by Dolly Parton.
Oh God, I can't express how much I love Dolly Parton. I'd take her to a desert.
Dolly
island.
Parton has been upsetting all the right people just recently hasn't she?
Has.
Bless
and
her. I think that's
just
fantastic.
I love her.
Yeah.
I just think she's great. The reason I could have picked any track by Dolly, because Dolly, like, I know her. she's a friend. But Jolene, the link for this was basically before lockdown with my choir, we were doing the Pentatonics arrangement of Jolene, which is awesome. But they love the song as well because of that arrangement. That's the best thing about it. And so I was like, I was looking for a cappella stuff and I was like, oh, Pentatonics is wicked. And then I love Jolene. So I was like, I'm going to be a bit selfish here. And now they love it. And then so... then in lockdown, we started creating the virtual choirs and getting them to... So Jamie recorded me singing all of the tracks, all of the parts, and then we sent them out to the kids and they all recorded their parts, and then we layered it up and made a big video. And it was awesome. So the reason I chose this song specifically is because it really is associated with lockdown, because I've heard it. I can't tell you how many times.
Yeah.
But also just what a great track. I mean, like, one riff, so simple. How many times does she say Jolene?
Many times.
And like, she really milks it, but it never gets boring, ever. And it's just, the reason I love the track as well is because it's a woman speaking to another woman. The man is actually, you know, the man's, it's not about the man. It's about woman to woman. And it's not hatred. It's not saying like, yo, back off, you know, you know, in a much more aggressive way. It's appreciating her almost for like, yeah, like he of course he's gonna like you. Wow. But please don't go there, because I really love him. And I also love the story behind Jolene as well, because it's kind of true, because it was, but it was a joke. It was, so her husband used to go to the bank, and there was this a bank clerk there that used to kind of flirt with him, and he used to come back and tell Dolly Parton about it. And she you know, they'd have a little in joke about it. There was no malice there at all. But then the name Jolene actually came from a young fan on stage who had approached Dolly Parton, and she was like, oh, you're so beautiful. What's your name? Oh, it's Jolene. And she had red hair. She had very fair skin. And she said, oh, I'm going to write a song about that one day. And so the two worlds came together. It's a great song.
Am I having weird flashbacks to you? Have you ever dressed up as her king?
You might have dreamt it.
Yeah. I haven't actually dressed up as Dolly.
I feel like someone
I've dressed
has,
up as Madonna at school.
It sounds like the kind of thing that our co-host Chris's mum might have done in her prime, I must say.
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely sounds like that sort of thing. It's,
I remember your Madonna. Do you remember that? I think that's on VHS somewhere in our attic.
Yeah. Material girl. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just go back to ask you some questions? You mentioned you were quite set up for virtual teaching.
Mm.
It sounds like your students really responded to it.
Mm.
How did you find the whole virtual choir thing? Was it as sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, satisfying as the videos look at? Like, the videos are really cool when you see them done, but is it a lot of hard work? Is it worth it, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hugely. Because it requires a completely different set of skills on my part and their part as well. I can't take any credit for any of the engineering. That is all Jamie. He's amazing. And he has to really coach me when I'm doing, because that is not a set of skills that I have either. So recording, I don't do a lot of recording. And if I do recording, it's live, rather than, you know, that kind of repeated studio recording.
Yeah.
So it was satisfying in the sense that I felt like I'd achieved and they'd achieved something that we never really would have got the opportunity to do before, and we were forced to do it. And that feeling of accomplishment when you see the final result, you're like, yes, oh my god, that's so awesome, we created that together. And I hope they're as proud of it as I am of them, for being able to do that. Because to ask a teenager to sit and listen to a click track and sing along perfectly in time, perfectly in the right pitch, which is really difficult, genuinely. I mean, it sounds really easy, but it's not. And to be able to breathe as a choir, but without being able to listen to anybody else, is really difficult. And also to have to film themselves doing it as well.
Yeah, and then have the guts to send it to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing. So yes, it was very satisfying.
Do you end up having to do much with it once it all comes back? What's the process?
Yeah, because I suppose, the elements to make a really clean a cappella recording just require everyone to not really have much personality in the voice. You can't, you know, even things like vibrato, where you breathe, expression, things like that, dynamics, and tone. It's really, so everyone sounds completely unique and individual. And the nature of this is that everyone has to sound completely uniform. So in terms of the post-production, it was a lot of work on my sound engineer's part to make it just sound like one voice in harmony. It was fascinating to watch him do it as well.
Yeah.
And also, it's just so, it's so beyond me, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But great to do.
Yeah, indeed.
Nice. Let's move on to track number 5 then, which is How far I'll go.
Again, it's lockdown. It's a lockdown teaching one. Because, and this is a joke.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the film.
You've got to get on it. Get on it.
I need to. Yeah. I need to.
I actually love Moana and I love teaching it and the kids love it. And that's the reason. So when I'm sitting in front of my iPad and you say to a student, so what do you want to sing next? And they go, I don't know. What do you think? You know, like classic. And you're like, oh God. So Jamie has made me aware that I have like particular go-tos. And so whatever is my favorite song to sing and play is theirs.
Right.
So that it always comes back to Moana and all of them want to sing it because it's quite accessible for a teenager to sing anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just really, they all love it and it makes me really happy to listen to them singing it as well.
But so I just said the stable of composers that Disney have used, it's just unbelievable.
The same guy who wrote Moana wrote Hamilton. And
oh, okay, yeah.
In the Heights, like, it's mad.
Yeah.
I love that.
But then you think there's kind of Alan Menken and Zimmer and all of these people that just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant composers and musicians. And
I'm such a Menken fan, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's on my go-to list when I'm advising anything Alan Menken.
Yeah.
It's such a belter.
Aladdin that did that for me. Yeah. It was just one after the other.
It was Beauty and the Beast for me, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, the Broadway version. It's one of my faves.
So
oh my God, it's great. That was really, that's the Moana story. And it's they all love singing it, whatever age. Everyone loves singing Disney. You can't deny it.
So Moana's How Far I'll Go is called an I Want song.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes.
Go on.
And an I Want song is a song from musical theatre that expresses the desires and motivations of one of the main characters of the story. A bit like, now I'm going to say something quite controversial here, Let It Go from Frozen, which in my head is way better than Moana.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
You'd agree?
Yes.
Okay good. Because some people love Moana and I just don't get it. I mean, I do like it.
What are you playing at, Charlotte?
It was a really close call between Let It Go. I was going to put Let It Go in there.
I would have enjoyed it a little bit more if he had.
I'm so sorry. I just love that kind of like almost tribal element to Moana. It's just
it's a very cool song.
Driving. I love it.
It is a very cool song. But yes, so Let It Go from Frozen is an I Want song, and things like Hellfire from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I don't know it myself, but that is another one.
The song, but it's...
I think it was a good choice.
Oh, thanks. It was... Yeah. Again.
Is that actually a thing, an I Want song? I haven't heard that before.
And it was... I haven't got it down here, but it's one Disney composer or someone came up with the term and coined it.
And is that a musical theatre thing or a Disney thing?
It's a music theatre thing, I think, as well, because it's the whole structure of music theatre is based on these sort of I don't have to hand the names of all the different kinds of songs, but for example, the I Want song or the crowd songs and things like
that. There's another one as well. I can't remember, but the I Want one comes towards the beginning, the first half of the film, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking of Something's Coming Now from West Side Story or something.
Yes.
Something like that might, is that one?
Yeah, I guess it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to go away and think about that now because that's a new one to make it.
We could do a whole podcast on I Want songs.
On I Want songs,
such a good theme.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Great
it's karaoke,
like the meet cute in rom coms, isn't it?
I hadn't
heard about that before too long.
But this
same
is
sort of thing. The meet cute in rom coms.
You must know this.
Okay.
Oh, it's a school day.
Go on.
The meet cute is where the two main characters in the rom-com come together for the first time, where they first meet.
Ah.
And you know, they kind of, you know, they always devise.
You know that they're going to end up together.
Yeah.
They
exactly.
may not and know that, it yet, but.
So there's a process. So you have the meet cute, and then it has to go wrong, and then they have to come back together. Yeah. You know, there's a whole formula.
And this, exactly. And this is why we love music theatre, because there's a formula. Exactly. They've found the formula. It really works.
It jolly well does, doesn't it?
And and we can just sit back and enjoy. No nasty surprises, like, you know, with Carmen. And it's a different structure.
Shall we move on, continuing the musical theatre theme to Defying Gravity?
Yes.
From Wicked.
Love this.
Why have I chosen this? This was so obvious to me. The thing that I missed the most during lockdown was singing after dinner. I don't know what it is. I have to sing. If I have people over or if I go to someone's house, obviously our friends are all musical, I have to do a small turn.
Gosh, I love this.
And one of the first songs I sang pretty much the entire score of Wicked when we were allowed around people's houses. Probably like illegally singing whatever, but you know, like slightly away from someone. And I sang Defying Gravity. My secret dream is to be a music theatre singer. I can't dance, so you know it's out the window for me. But Defying Gravity is just the best song to sing, and it's one that I'm like, I'm going to master this. I am going to conquer it.
And I tell you what, they are really, really bloody hard, aren't they?
You have to sing a top F in belt.
But I remember also whenever you know people would sort of give me these. It's Stephen Schwartz.
Oh yeah, and the piano parts.
To play the piano parts, and it's, I mean,
my
goodness
God, it's
me,
so syncopated in the chords.
And you think, oh, this is fine. This will be all right. And,
yes,
and it's hard.
It's really
hard.
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, yeah. Actually, I remember that was exactly the same reaction of one of my heads of music at the moment when I gave him Defying Gravity for one of the students.
Yeah.
And it was an A-level recital. He was like, I'm just going to pass it. He's an amazing pianist, but he was like, I'm going to pass this on to my friend.
Because it's as much, even when it's under your fingers, it's about the feel, if you don't get the feel, it's never going to work.
But
and I love the fact he always with Stephen Schwartz, I was thinking exactly the right notes in the bass, actually. It's always those big fat low bass
so
lines
fat.
That,
yeah,
and the bottom note is always exactly the right one.
Yeah, it's incredible music. I just love it. I love Wicked. I went to see it fairly recently. If I've seen it before.
Did you?
Yeah. But I saw it on Broadway first when it was first came, like years and years ago. But I just love the music, and it's never dull to me. And I love singing it. It's so good.
I've seen it as well. I saw it on Broadway too, actually. Ages ago.
It's not actually a competition.
No, I went to see it with my parents and my dad fell asleep. I don't really know how you can fall asleep in Wicked.
It's so loud.
And all the American audiences are all like cheering and like going for it.
Yes.
They love it. But for those of us, those people who haven't seen it, what is the rough storyline and what is the song about?
Oh, this, so it's kind of weird. It's like, it's pre-Wizard of Oz. So it's how did they all end up being in the, how does she become the Wicked Witch? How did the Good Witch become the Good Witch? You know, why are all these people scarecrows and tin men? And it's this story of the Emerald City before it kind of went into its demise. And so it's like a prequel, basically. Defying Gravity is basically Elphaba. She's the Green Witch. She sings it. It comes quite early on. Is it an I Want song? Probably.
Oh, see, no, I thought that when I first listened to it, but then I was like, oh, I don't know.
It's a duet. Actually, the original is a duet, but she has these really extraordinary powers that she can't keep under control when she goes to this special school. And everyone's like, oh, who's that widow? Who's that widow there with all those powers? And it says this is the moment when she embraces her powers. And she's like, no, I can do things with this. So I'm going to change everything for the better. But unfortunately, it kind of changes everything for the worst. And it's, yeah, that's Defying Gravity. And it's, I think it comes at the end of Act One. So it's like,
I'm going to say this is officially an I Want song.
If yeah.
It hasn't been said before. Sounds, it's like Elsa from Frozen, although she turns out good in the end. But yeah. It's kind of the same thing.
Exactly. She has these powers Exactly. And it's quite an amazing epic moment to see Elphaba floating at the top of the stage, and then the curtain comes down. You're like, and you just feel like, oh my god, what was that?
There's the range of emotions that you go through when you listen to this song. There's so many sort of little bits to it, and it just completely like changes all the time. You have to listen to it a few times, I think, to like completely listen to all the different words that they're saying to sort of get the story and to take it all in.
Yeah.
It's not one that you can just sort of listen to and then sort of put it away.
No.
I felt as well. And also another fun fact is that it was used by NASA on April the 8th in 2010 to wake up mission specialist Dottie Metcalf Lindebergen. I might have said that wrong.
We're not going to know. Space...
No. No one's going to write in.
The thing is, I've got it written down. I can't read my own writing.
You get an angry tweet from someone.
But yeah, it was used to wake up a space woman in space. And I think that's really cool.
Oh my God. That is cool.
What a song to wake up to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to press snooze for that one.
I do always quite like that sort of political analysis of the Wizard of Oz, you know, the kind of yellow brick road being the American dream and Oz being kind of ounces for gold, which is what the yellow brick road is and all of that kind of stuff.
It's much deeper than we think it is.
Yeah. So you've got your Tin Man being industry and your Scarecrow being agriculture and all of that kind of stuff. It's all quite serious.
Never heard of anything like that.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? And then think
I'm going to look into that.
Do, because there's a sort of, you know, there's quite a strong allegorical, and that, you know, that makes the bit where, you know, where, towards the end where she pulls back the curtain and it's just a guy and he says, don't pay any attention to the guy behind the curtain, and it's all just smoke and mirrors.
Mm.
And, you know, now it's more true than ever now,
very
isn't it?
Relevant, very.
You see who's in charge of us now.
I think we should do another podcast analysing Wicked and
Wizard of Oz. Yeah. No, it's I'm sure that's why Oz is Oz. It's all about ounces of gold, and that's what the Yellow Brick Road is. It's all about the American dream and stuff. So
interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you a question, if I may. What do you think the future, when you go back to school, are you still going to be doing virtual teaching, or will you be going into your schools? You say you work at 6 different schools.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you still are you able to keep up going into 6 different places, or sort of how is that going to work?
Yeah. So we've been told we're allowed to move between schools, which is great. One school hasn't got appropriate ventilation in the practice room. So they've been amazing. And they've put a computer in the practice room. So I'm going to be at home online, and the kids are going to walk from their music lesson into their singing lesson, and I'm going to be online. So that's incredible. Another school, there's an issue. The music department is no longer the music department. So we can't go in there. So they're going to be in school, but I have to teach them when they're at home, so after school. So that's tricky to try and fit that in. The others are with group singing, and we can go back live, but there are lots of social distancing measures. Can't sing very loudly, got to do a lot of musicianship, lots of clapping circles, things like that. Yeah, it's going to be a very, very different approach, I think, and every school is different. And I think that's the thing, you know, we all have the same guidelines, but every school's got a different approach. So for me, it's going to be a bit of a, I think next term's going to be more difficult than this term actually has been.
Yeah, which doing is, so many different things.
Yeah. And
instead of just being at home all the time, now it's...
Yeah, and so it's, sometimes I'm at home, sometimes I'm driving to Kent, sometimes going back to Essex. And but I think I'm just going to be glad to be able to see some of the kids in person. It'll be nice to be able to, because I think, I mean, for them, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a teenager and have to deal with that. Like, who has that emotional capacity? That's crazy.
It's been very odd for them. I mean, I've got several in my house.
Yeah.
They're all mine, but I'm just kidding. I'm just kidnap some, but... it's been quite difficult, and you know, even though the schools have been superb about online resources and Google Classrooms and all the usual stuff, it's still very tricky, and it's still you know, that you miss that kind of face to face contact, and you know, their friends and group dynamics and all of that kind of stuff. It's not been an easy time at all. And you know, bizarrely, you know, you get to this time in August and usually they're starting to kind of, you know, see all the back to school stuff in supermarkets and shops and things and think, oh God, you know, it's not long to go. Whereas actually this time, I think they're actually really keen to get back and just get back to some sort of
normality
routine.
And
I mean, especially, you know, for the older ones, because they had such a dreadful couple of weeks with the way results have been handled. You know, my eldest was kind of right in the middle of that, because where I live we still have AS levels. You know, he kind of got absolutely rammed by the algorithm and then got his predicted grades back. So It was a horrible few days.
That is to have
two grades in every subject, bless him. You know, it's not fair. You know.
No, it's not fair. And then so they have to deal with that, and for, you know, a few days, and then they're like, oh, don't worry, now you can have your predicted grades.
I know. Like, and in the meantime, he hasn't lifted a pen. You know, so it's all somebody else's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, you know, so even when they said they're going to, you know, ignore the algorithm and go with predicted grades, you know, that relief is kind of really tinged with anger that they would actually forget that there are real, actual, living, breathing people.
Yeah. And I suppose create such an amount of distrust.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, the distrust there's.
Which is not great for that particular generation. I mean, this generation's about to... Right. He's going to be able to vote next year.
Very soon. Yeah. exactly right. And so are all their parents.
Exactly. It's going to look very, very different. I hope.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't envy them at all. At all.
We've still got a couple of things to go.
We do. Charlotte King, Mezzo Soprano.
Come on.
Let's talk about track... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Lime, jello, marshmallow.
Oh my gosh.
Go on.
Cottage cheese surprise.
Yeah, go on. Go on.
I loved this.
This is so good.
Is this one of the ones you sing after dinner?
Well, no, actually it's not. But it's, aside from...
It should be.
Yeah, no. Aside from... It's quite a mouthful to remember if you've had some drinks. So aside from opera and teaching, I started doing completely...
It could be your rider, actually.
Yes!
Sorry, go on.
So aside from all the other stuff, I started just completely by coincidence doing this... like cabaret set. So I love singing music theatre. I love singing opera. And then I was like, well, what comes most naturally to me is really singing Rodgers and Hammerstein, really old music theatre that's basically operetta. And also these sort of parlour songs. It's almost like a parlour song. And funny, cheeky songs that are a little bit weird, that the audience are laughing and they're like, oh, this is a bit weird.
Yeah.
And I just went, so when I was trying to originally come up with this whole cabaret set, I was just picking all of these songs that are a little bit naughty, and I love singing them. So Lime Jello Marshmallow Cottage Cheese Surprise, thank God I said that, is a cabaret song by William Bolcom, American composer, still active, very much active. So I'm so sorry if I'm taking your fun facts away.
No, you go for it. I will let you know if you are.
He wrote 4 volumes of cabaret songs, and I have only performed maybe 8 of them, but they are fantastic. He's an incredible composer. So many different styles fused together, really quite complex, but throughout you have this amazing storytelling, and that's really what cabaret is all about, and satire and things like that, and humor, and musically humorous. And I love being able to perform that, and it's something that I've been thinking about and working on for quite a long time now, that ultimately I would just love to be able to have someone to arrange with a bespoke cabaret set. And so Bolcom wrote for his wife Joan Morris, who is a singer, she's a mezzo, and she's hilarious. And their recordings, if you ever get to listen to the cabaret recordings, Bolcom, they're so imperfect. And that's what I love about this music, about cabaret music in general, is it has to have spontaneity in order to perform it. Not just the singer, but the pianist as well. You have to have an amazing rapport with your pianist, which I'm very fortunate that I do. They have to have amazing comedic timing. And it has to make the audience laugh, but not in a forced way. And that's what they have that chemistry. He's an incredible musician, and she's hilarious and so off the cuff. And what's great about it is that it's not beautiful at all. It's kind of ugly in places. And that's what's great about it, because it's so close to speaking. And that's what the audience really gets. And they can, it's just like listening to someone talk. But I had a funny story about my pianist, Dylan Perez, who actually really introduced me to the Bolcom cabaret songs. We performed them together. And he has met and worked with Bolcom. He's from Michigan. And he just was telling me this story about how he managed to get William and Joan completely off their face in a restaurant, and then they just got up and did an impromptu set, and the whole restaurant was like, what is this? They're so weird and amazing. Yeah. It's just great music. So
have you done, during lockdown, have you done any live streams of it, or have you been able to partner up with your pianist?
No, well, it's on the cards. I know we're kind of out of lockdown now, so it doesn't mean anything. But
it means everything. And also, no, we can't go and see it.
Exactly,
exactly.
I mean, so
you got to do it.
Jamie started this live streaming company for classical musicians, not just classical, but he's been doing some stuff at the Arts Club and so helping out singers and going in and streaming them live. So I have suggested on several occasions, maybe can I go to Dylan's and can we just do it? So it's on the cards, but we just need to kind of find a narrative for it, actually, just more like, because I basically want it to be like, here are some songs that I like singing after dinner, and just have almost like a fly on the wall style, because that's what we've also been doing in the live streams. I don't know if you know Simon Lepper. He's a really great pianist. The reason I ask is because he's actually on so many of the ABRSM recordings for the backing tracks, and we've been in his garden recording from his pod and doing stuff from there. So it's yes, the answer is I really want to do one. I just have to convince Jamie to let me do it.
Yay, well, we would like pump, please. Yeah, so if that
go on,
helps
Jamie.
So the last track, which I had never heard of, and I absolutely loved, actually, is called Opening the New World.
I love Songs for a New World. So if you're so Songs for a New World is basically a song cycle. It's like a music theatre song cycle. And it was like an off-Broadway thing. And written by Jason Robert Brown, who, if you're a music theatre fan or performer, you know who that is. And he's very famous and active. And he wrote The Last 5 Years and things that people just generally love to sing and listen to. This was written in the 90s. Why did I choose it? Because I love listening to it. It's for four singers, SATB, and the whole point of it is different characters each encountering a journey, and how, you know, they hit the wall, and do they break through it, or do they turn around and do they flee? And it's just about just different characters and coming together, and how do they face it? How do they face all of these challenges? And there's something quite epic about the opening of that song cycle as well. If you get a chance to listen to the rest of the cycle, it's great. There's something for everyone.
So is this a song cycle in, you mean, what I would understand if I was thinking about Schubert or Schumann or someone like that, but just in a musical theatre style? Or are we talking about sort of semi-stage? I mean, how do these genres come together?
There's so many different genres within this work, and it's pop and rock and gospel and jazz and traditional music theatre all rolled into one.
So there's a narrative that runs through it.
The overall general narrative is each character has a moment in life that they reach, and they have to make a decision. What's the decision going to be? How's it going to affect them? How's it going to change them? So that's the overall narrative. But then each character, each song is different, and a different person singing.
And this opening, I did listen to it, but this opening, is this all the characters all together?
Yes.
It's kind of just like...
Yeah, and they come together at the end as well. And there are moments, I mean, they essentially, if there's a solo song, quite often the other singers will act as the backing singers. And so when, just coming back to whether it's staged or semi-staged, it's kind of semi-staged. It's like a concert version, step outs, that kind of thing. And it's done with the piano band. It can be done with just piano as well. I've heard that done. And and so that you find these moments of all of them coming back together, and then they go off on their own individual journeys again, and it's super cheesy but great.
Why is this the last one on your list?
It's a really good question. Because, you know, during this, I hate to sound all sentimental and cheesy, but during this time, we've all faced challenges. Everyone, like, some are small, some are big, but it doesn't matter, because they're all our own personal challenges, all our own journeys. So, and we've had to approach things in a completely different way. And we've come up against it and we've gone, right, what am I going to do? Am I just going to quit? I'm just going to stop? Or am I going to grab it and just do what I can? And this is where we're at with everything in life, but for us particularly as opera singers, is adapt or die. You know, you have to do something. You've come up against a challenge. You can't do it the old way. So come on, think of something else. And that's why it's the last song, because it brings a lot of joy. I love listening to it, but it really is quite appropriate for how I think we've all been feeling.
I think that's very nice. Yeah, that's not soppy or sentimental.
Oh, good. Oh,
no.
No, I hate sounding soppy. Yeah.
Off the topic of music, then, has there been a box set or a movie or a book or one of each that's kind of got you through? I don't know if we told you to ask you to think about this.
No, but I like to just throw this at people.
do you know what?
A box set, a book, or a movie, or all three.
Right, I loved Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh, did you read the book or watch it, or both?
I watched it. And I thought that I love anything with Reese Witherspoon. I just love her.
She's so
good. In the morning show as well. I saw that pre-lockdown, but I wish I'd watched it during lockdown.
I haven't seen the morning show.
Oh. I haven't watched it yet.
Did you watch the Little Fires Everywhere Gogglebox episode? That was hilarious.
I think I did, because I saw all the Gogglebox, but I can't remember what you were
about. They were just all kind of yelling at the TV. It's just very funny.
I love Gogglebox, and that's one of the things as well that I've been watching really. I watched the celebrity one as well.
So
I just love looking in people's houses.
I know.
And actually, other things that have got me through, more like TV shows, like... Make Your House Perfect. It's got,
right.
Oh my god, it's like an architectural program. I think it's on BBC Two.
Not the one with the virtual reality sets. Yeah.
Oh my god. It's so good. It's like, how do I completely redesign my house by putting some VR goggles on? And it's so that was on, you know, the more relaxed side. I'm definitely more of a watcher than a reader, and totally addicted to shows like that. It's embarrassing, actually.
Charlotte King, mezzo-soprano.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Funny little podcast. Your list was really epic.
It was a great list. I loved it.
Sorry about it, but, you know...
Don't apologise. You do you, it's fine.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much.
But yeah, thank you for coming on. It's been wonderful. And if we have nothing else to say, I'll bid you farewell and we'll see you next time.
Aww. We will. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.